Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the voice of the American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt broadcasting live from an undisclosed location deep within the free zones inside the American Redoubt. This is John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too. If you are a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, thank you all for tuning in across the American Redoubt and the other free zones. And if you are outside the wire in occupied territory, well, stay encouraged. You're not alone. You got a lifeline here. Thank you guys for tuning in and listening all across Eastern Washington, where you're listening terrestrial in the Tri-Cities, Yakima, Wenatchee, Spokane, Moses Lake, Northeast Oregon, Northern Idaho. All of you, welcome one and all. And we are really especially appreciate our live listening audience, live streaming. Okay, don't forget, we're putting a lot of stuff daily, multiple times a day, on our Facebook page. For those of you who do social media, facebook.com, Radio Free Redoubt, check it out. Thank you all also for listening and listening in and following me over to cover Patriot Radio for Matt Shea for the last couple of weeks. That is always an honor and a treat. And it's always great to have Radio Free Redoubt listeners gravitate over there and show your support. Thank you guys for your prayers and your support and encouragement. It all means a lot. Okay. And hey, tell Matt how I did. Let him know. Give him a report card. So hopefully be able to do it again next time he needs someone to cover down for him. All right, now let's get into the news and commentary from AP, UPI, and the major American networks. The news is next right here on Radio Free Redoubt. And the news is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Let's go right into international news. From the Socialist Paradise update, we're bringing you up weekly updates from Venezuela. In Caracas, this article states, if a visitor to Venezuela is unfortunate enough to pay for anything with a foreign credit card, the eye-watering cost might suggest that they were in a city pricier than Tokyo or Zurich. A hamburger sold for 1,700 Venezuelan bolivars is $170 in American money. A hotel room is $6,900 a night, U.S. dollars. Now, that's based on the official rate of 10 bolivars for one U.S. dollar. But, of course, no merchant is pricing at the official rate imposed under currency controls. It's the black market rate of 1,000 bolivars per dollar that's applied. But for Venezuelans paid in hyperinflation, they're living in an economy relying mostly on imported goods or raw materials. Conditions are unthinkably expensive. Even for the middle class, most of it is sliding into poverty. Hamburgers and hotels are out of reach. One individual, Marta Gonzalez, a manager of a corner beauty product store, said nobody's buying anything, just food. And that's what they're lining up for. They have people lining up in front of a pharmacy and nobody knows why everybody's lining up. So everybody lines up because they must be missing out on something good, because they get a weekly shipment of rationed items like personal hygiene items, toothpaste, toilet paper. And most of those people, they run out before they get up there standing in line for hours. They're extremely frustrated right now. A lot of manipulation going on. They have a failed economy. Well, the reason why we cover this is because there are many financial experts that are saying that's headed our way. Eventually, the card game they're playing is going to catch up with us, the smoke and mirrors. Well, let's cover national news here in the United States. The FBI's website, FBI.gov, they're reaching out about female genital mutilation. In America? Yes. They're saying more than 500,000 women and girls across the country, most of them living in metropolitan areas, are at risk of undergoing female genital mutilation. They say a procedure that has long been practiced in many African and Middle Eastern countries as a cultural custom. A cultural custom. There's no mention of Islam here. That is Islamic practice. There is no other religion or culture which practices female genital mutilation. But they don't say that it's a cultural custom we're trying to get people to not do when they're – they don't say anything about Islam. They bury it. That's this administration. This administration is make sure anything in all their counterterrorism literature, their training, their indoctrination is all scrubbed of any reference to Islam. They call it – well, now with the new vernacular, it's extremism. We'll be talking more about that later. We thought we had a good thing this week. In Oklahoma, overwhelmingly passed a law making it a felony to carry out an abortion. Well, the governor, supposedly pro-life governor, vetoed it. Governor Mary Fallon on Friday vetoed the bill that would criminalize abortion procedures in the state. Why? Well, the decision to veto the bill, which likely would have opened up the state to lawsuits. Oh, it's about lawsuits. How much is a human life worth? How much money do we squander on frivolous things? And they're worried about the hundreds of thousands of dollars they're saying it could cost in lawsuits. Well, this comes at a time when Fallon is also considered a possible running mate for presumptive GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump. Ding, 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 ding. Bingo. We do not want to disrupt this possible career move. I'm going to veto this bill that would have saved countless lives. The most vulnerable, the unborn. Sources familiar with the governor's thinking told CNN that the decision to veto the bill weighed heavily on the anti-abortion rights governor. But that the hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees faced by the state from a near certain constitutional challenge to the bill eventually led her to her veto. We are selling out. She sold out. She sold out. Now, in other news, in a letter to Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich and Nevada Attorney General Adam Paul, one senator and six state representatives are demanding an investigation and civil rights violation charges related to the death of Arizona citizen and rancher Lavoie Finicum in January of this year. The letter was also sent to the governors of Arizona, Nevada, and Oregon. The letter calls into question the inconsistencies as it relates to civil rights lawsuits where the state governments have filed numerous civil rights complaints in the past, often supporting known criminals, and many of those lawsuits targeting law enforcement officials, as well as state and local governments. Meanwhile, no civil rights complaints have been filed on behalf of Lavoie Finicum, where he was shot when there was no gun in his hand, nor was a gun even visually identified when the Oregon police shot him. This letter goes on to cite numerous examples of occupations by anarchist-style groups which have resulted in truly large-scale damage to public and private property, assaults, rape, and outright lawlessness. Just one such example cited in their letter was the politically motivated four-month takeover of the Wisconsin state capitol from February 14th to June 16th of 2011. But in those cases, the government and law enforcement essentially allowed it. They let those events play themselves out and just fizzle. But not in Oregon, not when we're dealing with conservative right-wing protesters. But in these other situations, law enforcement restrained themselves and allowed the carnage to continue, and resulting in little to no enforcement action by law enforcement, and definitely no FBI paramilitary style takeovers. The letter does go on to point out regarding the wildlife refuge occupiers that they were merely exercising their constitutionally guaranteed First Amendment rights of free speech to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances, which is what they were doing. And that is not what was happening in these other cases with these other so-called occupations. It was just pure lawlessness and destruction of property, but no one held accountable. So they're pushing for this. This letter, this is just breaking now here at Radio Free Redoubt. That's also going to be an article posted at Redoubt News. So follow those folks over there. They're doing a great job for lots of articles related to conservative, God-fearing patriots, especially as it relates to the American Redoubt and other freedom issues. Go to redoubtnews.com. And speaking of the Redoubt, regional news. Well, close to the regional news, right outside the wire in occupied territory. Yet another case for homeschooling, especially if you're trapped in the occupied zones, or another argument to flee into the American Redoubt or one of the other free zones. Out of the Portland Tribune, Portland School Board bans climate change denying materials. Wow. In a move spearheaded by environmentalists, the Portland Public Schools Board unanimously approved a resolution aimed at eliminating doubt of climate change and its causes in schools. It is unacceptable that we have textbooks in our schools that spread doubt about the lies, I mean, the human causes and urgency of the crisis. Incredible. And one more here. Planned Parenthood is breaking ground on a new $5 million Spokane facility. A nonprofit has $5 million. They're making a killing. This is not nonprofit. We'll be back in a minute. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want to secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food, and security surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
Is it too much to ask that we fulfill these obligations of citizenship? If we think so, we should read again the history of the founding of this nation and consider the hardships of the people who made possible our freedom. They felt that no challenge was too great if freedom was at stake. That spirit carried them on. It created for us the foundation of our great heritage. We have seen it flare up and burn brightly in every national emergency, on the battlefields and at home. The socialists, the communists, and their followers would like to see the American spirit extinguished. If each of us will rise to the occasion, if every citizen, young and old, will accept the challenge of his citizenship, then the socialist and communist and their followers will not prevail, and America will go on toward the fulfillment of her great world destiny.
Dr. Clifton L. Gaines, Jr. was our instructor. This is a continuing series based on the unique political and economic system which has made America great.
You're listening to Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American Readout.
This is the war for everything that we cherish and value, for our heritage. As God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots, it is all under attack. They're not taking anything off the table, and this requires something of you and me. If you care about your heritage and want to pass something down for your posterity to your children, this is what we're talking about here. This segment is brought to you by Works.com, Works Holsters, custom-made holsters made right here in the American Readout. These are Kydex holsters with a lifetime guarantee. Don't forget to use your coupon code RFR on your next purchase, and thank you for supporting our sponsors. Now, today's guest is someone who I greatly admire. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. This is an attorney, and this is just a – I'm going to give you just a glimpse into – who she is and qualifications, and then we're going to bring her on and let you hear from her about the fight, about the war that we're in, and some of the tools that are at our fingertips. She's an attorney, a professor of law, an international speaker. She specializes in and teaches constitutional law, unlike Barack Obama. We're talking about a true lawyer, constitutional lawyer. She specializes in criminal defense practices, former deputy district attorney. She's a professor at the college, the Colorado Christian University in the communications department, College of Adult and Graduate Studies. Jenna is an on-air legal analyst for Moody Bible Institute Radio and a frequent guest on other local and national radio programs. And she's also a contributor to the Strident Conservative, also a leader and legislative liaison with the Convention of States Project. Jenna Ellis, it is an honor to have you on with us at Radio Free Readout.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this as well. So I appreciate the ability to come on and to talk about liberty and the things that we as Americans hold dear.
Absolutely. And I just so much appreciate the ongoing fight that you're in to educate people. And I want to kind of set this up because – we are in a crisis on many levels in our country, not to mention a constitutional crisis, which is the area of focus that brings you in and we want to talk about. And most of the citizens, including among the Christians, don't even realize what's happening. They don't know how far we've departed from our heritage. And I think it's really important that the timeless scriptures in Hosea and Isaiah, for example, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because thou hast rejected knowledge. I will also reject thee, and thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. That scripture scares the snot out of me. So we're in the business of educating, to bringing that knowledge back, and that's where you come in. So,
yes. Absolutely. And that's really, that is the focus, is to understand as Christians what our rights are, where they come from, and to not just look at this as one individual issue at a time. We've been involved in the abortion debate, the same-sex marriage debate, now the transgender bathroom law debate, what you were just talking about with Oklahoma abortions. So all of these things, rather than just hitting on each issue, we need to understand first, where does law come from And then what are our rights as American citizens within our supreme law, which is the U.S. Constitution? And so to set this up, as you said, you posted on your website, if any of the listeners can get there, what I call the founding documents hierarchy. And that's on the website there. And that's a great visual. And I want to explain what that is and why I developed this as an aid to understand the U.S. Constitution in context. So when I went to law school, I'm a Christian. I was raised a Christian. I have been very involved in worldview studies. I know that law comes from God. We start with the premise, truth is, in the beginning, God. We know that everything, all of the reality to which we are presented comes from God. So then I went to law school and saw in the context of our constitutional law, God was expressly rejected, and we were taught as new lawyers that all of the Supreme Court decisions, such as Roe v. Wade and all of the ones that we can all cite to, Griswold v. Connecticut, coming out of the Supreme Court, advanced secular ideas of law, and they took away our rights. And so I saw this great disparity of saying, okay, wait a minute, we know as patriots that our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. What happened, and how is that possible that our Supreme Court actually interpreted the Constitution that way? So for the last 5 years, I went back and was researching this and said, okay, what happened and where can we go from here? So this founding documents hierarchy really is the lens that will help you understand the Constitution in context. We understand that the foundation of law comes from God. The origin is God himself. And so he gives all authority through his law. And that's the foundation that the founders specifically appealed to in the Declaration of Independence. If I go into a courtroom and I say, Judge, I want to do this for my client, I want you to rule that way, he's going to say, Counsel, what's your authority for that? What is your legitimate legal principle? Where does your law come from that I can then take and rule for you? And so the founders understood when they were creating our new country that they had to appeal to a legitimate source of authority to declare a new sovereignty. And that's exactly what they did in the Declaration of Independence. They said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. So right there, we understand that they said truth is, and our rights come from God. They are unalienable, and they come before the Constitution, before civil government. And so they expressly appealed to God's law. And they said, because those rights are given to us as the individuals, whenever a government seeks to usurp those rights, then it is one of our rights given by God to alter or abolish our system of government. Because the only proper role of government is to preserve and protect the individual's rights. So our founders gave us this wonderful statement in the Declaration of Independence, and that was predicated on God's law. So anything else coming out of America has to be consistent with God's law as our authority. Other nations get that wrong, and we see that other nations have gotten that wrong throughout the course of human history. And I could be on any radio station in any seminar anywhere in the world, and I would still be able to say God's law is the only legitimate authority. But in America, we are so privileged to live in this country because our system of government actually expressly recognizes God. And so our founders gave us the Declaration of Independence, and then once they established that the only proper role of government is limited, and it is to preserve and protect our rights, all they had to do then was establish what type of government best does that. And as a lot of them were lawyers, they understood that there are many different ways that we might implement that. And they debated very heavily. We see that in the Federalist Papers, among other contemporary documents, arguments. That was just the rationale or the reason that each of them thought one particular type of government or how they were going to shape that, what their arguments were for.
This is so important foundationally, because I see a big trend among the patriot community of people that they want to fight against tyranny. They don't like the government overreach, blah, blah, blah. They talk about the Constitution, but they say, but I'm not religious and the religious thing isn't for me and don't preach to me. I'm thinking, you don't want there not to be a God, because that puts the government as the highest authority.
Exactly. And so what they're trying to do is to take the U.S. Constitution and make that into just a contract between the states and the people, and to say that then becomes actually our highest source of authority is simply whatever law man decides. And so whatever majority happens to be in our federal government, specifically on the Supreme Court, they can make and manipulate whatever law they want, because there is no higher standard. But we have to remember that it's not what I believe versus what you believe versus what someone else believes. It's that truth is, God's law is always the highest moral ground. And specifically in America, our Constitution cannot be separated from its roots in the Declaration as a founding document, which specifically acknowledged God's law is where our rights come from. It is not the government. So when we're advocating for our Constitution, we have to remember what it is in context. So when the founders were debating that and ultimately ratified what is our supreme law now, all that document is giving limited, fixed, objective, understood, definable powers to the federal government in order to fulfill their mandate of preserving and protecting our rights. That's all that it is. They decided to separate it into the three branches that we know about, the legislative, executive, and judicial, and they spread out the powers to say, okay, federal government, you need to do these things for the general welfare of our entire union, but then all powers that were not specifically given to our federal government are actually reserved to the states, and then the states still have to go by that mandate to then preserve and protect the rights of each individual citizen. So when we understand the law and American law and our constitutional law in that framework and context, we can clearly see that the federal government, through Obama's edict last Friday, through a lot of these Supreme Court cases, the same-sex marriage decision last June, they are expressly unconstitutional, because yes, we're not just taking one word out of the Constitution and making some legal fiction and legal doctrine around it. We're understanding that the Constitution only gives limited powers to our federal government. That's it. So we have to understand and advocate on a different ground, not just issue to issue saying, I am pro-life, and I absolutely am, and I disagree with abortion. And then the secularist will come back and say, well, too bad, I disagree with it. So let's go and argue before the Supreme Court, and whoever happens to be on the majority, that's what we go by, because now they have become our king. They have become our sovereign, and Obama as well. And whoever is elected in November will, unless we as states and as individuals of the state do something about it and stand up for our rights that come from God, the next president will just continue to issue executive orders and continue to usurp our rights. And that's how far we've come, is to have a big federal government, because we as individuals no longer understand.
Well, we got to take a break. Jenna, we're with Jenna, constitutional attorney. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay right there. This is Radio Free Readout.
It makes me livid when I hear the anti-self-defense thugs and their minions in the government, in the media, and from Hollywood talk about common sense gun regulation or reasonable measures to keep criminals from getting their hands on guns. Fortunately, the pro-Second Amendment Americans vastly outnumber the hopeful slave makers. Still, they keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Since they can't ban combat rifles or handguns outright without starting the Second American Revolution, they change their tactics. These appear as soft tactics, but their end goal is the same: disarm the American people. And their sights are set specifically on the middle class. These tactics are licensing and registration. This creeping gradualism is nothing short of tyranny, and has historically always led to confiscation. If they were honest with you and me, and especially themselves, they would acknowledge their measures do nothing to reduce crime. But then, reducing crime was never their goal. Vladimir Lenin said, "A system of licensing and registration is the perfect device to deny gun ownership to the bourgeoisie. But I say, never register or license your arms, and never give them up." I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
I want to thank Radio Free Readout for being here and for broadcasting it so that the message reaches far beyond this room. But this is a cool little room. Something I've encountered quite a lot is members of the Patriot community getting burned out because you alienate friends, you alienate family. Most of the time it's a thankless job for most people, and it takes a lot of love to keep going. You really have to know what you're fighting for, and have a firm understanding of that. I find that in my life, you know, spending all this time away from my wife and my babies is very difficult. It's very lonely and it's very difficult, but I have to keep going because I'm fighting for them. Well, you know, like I said before, the bad guys don't take a day off. So neither can I.
This is Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American Readout. I am John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name, too. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, welcome to Segment 3, which is brought to you by our newest sponsor, and I want to ask for you to join me in welcoming Riverfront Suites. If you just need a weekend to get away, you need a retreat, or you're in the area looking to strategically relocate and you need a place to hang your hat, riverfrontsuites.com, right outside of beautiful St. Mary's, Idaho, close to Spokane and Coeur d'Alene, while you're doing your window shopping and land hunting. Riverfrontsuites.com. Check them out today. Also, my email is johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. I try to field all emails, but I have gotten behind. I am at the point where I'm just flat overwhelmed. So if there's something pressing you need me to get back to you on, please email me again. Wave your hand in front of me. It's a great help, especially when I'm in avalanche mode, which is pretty much where I've been for the last 3 months. We are joined, if you're just joining us late, we are having a great conversation with the constitutional attorney, Jenna Ellis, Christian attorney, advocating for our Constitution, our heritage, and educating people to get us back on track with the heritage that we've had stripped from us, stolen from us, and most people aren't even aware of it. And when they do become aware of it, they don't know what to do about it. So, Jenna, it is great to have you with us. Jenna Ellis, thank you.
Thank you. And it is a great conversation to talk about where our rights come from. And if anyone missed the last segment, you can hear about all of this on a presentation that I have that's free up on YouTube. If you just Google my name, Jenna Ellis, and constitutional literacy, you will see that. You can also read a lot more even than I was able to put into my presentation in my book that talks about this. And where our rights come from, the Constitution in context, and actually goes through cases from the Supreme Court for the last 50 and 60 years and shows you how the Supreme Court has twisted the Constitution, taken it out of context, And that book is available on my website, jennaellis.org, or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, other outlets. It's called The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. And that's what we're really talking about, is biblical morality in law, and specifically American law and the U.S. Constitution. So when we understand that our Constitution simply grants limited rights to our federal government, and then all other legitimate powers that are not granted to the federal government are reserved to the states to preserve and protect each individual's rights. What happens then? What can we do? Becomes the question when we see that our federal government is not being responsible with their limited powers to regulate our country. What can we do? Well, the founders were so brilliant, and they understood, being lawyers, that they may not have gotten everything exactly right, or the federal government may try to take advantage of the limited powers that are granted by the Constitution. So they gave us Article 5 in the Constitution, and that simply says not that our rights can change, not that the source of our rights changes, not that anything about who we are as made in the image of God changes whatsoever. But what can change is what we as citizens allow our federal government to do, how they regulate. So what Article 5 does is says that Congress can amend the Constitution and either redistribute some of those powers that are given to the federal government or limit them even further. And we've seen that Congress can do that through Article 5. They can propose those amendments that then still have to be ratified by the states. Or the states, when Congress is not doing their job, which they are not in Washington right now, then the states can act as Congress. And they can, by application of two-thirds of the states, call for a convention of states for proposing amendments. And one of the things that is not understood well from a constitutional standpoint is this term convention of the states. A lot of people think that this means, just because the word convention is also used, that it's a constitutional convention, like what the founders had in 1787, that we will be rewriting our entire constitution, or that a convention of the states would have that authority. Absolutely not. Just like Congress, when they propose amendments, which they've done, and amendments have been ratified to our Constitution 27 times, Congress does not have that authority when they are proposing amendments. Neither will the states when they are proposing amendments. All they can do at this convention of the states is act in the capacity of Congress for the express and sole purpose of proposing amendments. Then those amendments have to be ratified by three-fourths of the states, just like any congressional amendments. So we just see that the founders give us two options, and it's a separation of powers. It's saying Congress has this limited power to propose amendments that are in furtherance of preserving and protecting our rights, and if they won't do it, if they are abusing that power, the states also have that right. And that's the situation that we're in today. When we are seeing that states are starting to stand up, our state governments, our governors, and our legislators are actually standing up. North Carolina, Texas, Pennsylvania, some of these are actually standing up and passing their own laws, and they're saying, no, we are not going to do this. And
I have a couple of questions I want to interject, because full disclosure here, I've been a long time very strong skeptic of a convention of the states for a couple reasons. But I want to hear both sides of this. And my question is several things that, and I really want to hear it explained well. And I think you're the right person to do this. First of all, it requires 34 states, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, to call the convention, it's two-thirds of the states, which right now would be 34.
Okay, so we've got – so far, this is a trust issue. I do not trust these people to – look, we just had Oklahoma conservative governor pro-life governor just veto the opportunity to ban something. We have North Carolina and we have Texas in our hip pocket, but we have also the governor in Idaho did not even put up a fight. There was not even a whimper when the Supreme Court struck down Idaho's constitutional amendment defining marriage between a man and a woman. He just shrugged and went, well, they just ruled, so that's the way it is. Without appealing, without even protesting, the following morning he ordered all county clerks to begin issuing homosexual marriage licenses. Mm-hmm. So,
and right there, exactly that point is why a convention of states is necessary. Because if we try to do this on just a state-by-state level, then you do have a governor's right to veto some of this. And also, that would only impact Idaho. And certainly that would have been a great law to be able to say, no, we don't recognize the overreach of the Supreme Court in the same-sex marriage decision. But that would only be controlling in Idaho. And so each individual state would have to stand up. And you also do have the governor in place that can veto some of these bills unless you have the veto override process. So a convention of states is necessary in order to have this on a national scale. And if we are going to bring about the first step to procedural changes and to say federal government, no, the states are standing up, we have to do it by collecting the state legislatures together. The governor is not involved. It's the state legislatures that pass this application. In Idaho, you have a great legislature. And so they can pass this application. The governor can't veto it. It is an application directly to Congress.
Okay, that was my next question, is who chooses the delegates for the convention?
That's done on a state-by-state basis. And so the states can they can determine what their process is for selecting delegates that will go to the convention and ultimately be part of that proposal process. And so, but what's important to understand is that in order to actually pass a proposition out of the convention to get to the ratification process, it does not matter how many delegates come from each individual state. Each state only gets one vote. And however they determine their process for delegates and for voting, that's up to each individual state, as it should be. State sovereignty is something that we as Americans don't really understand anymore, that the states should be governing themselves largely under our Constitution. But it is one state, one vote, just like one state, one application to get there. A state like Texas can't pass 34 applications and call a convention on its own. In the same way, each state cannot have more than one vote in the ratification process.
Okay, so I guess looking at this, if I want to determine the likelihood or probability of which how they would handle this to handle it properly the way that the majority of the people would will them to a measure of their will would be how have they done in asserting the 10th Amendment, because they already have the 10th Amendment to assert their state's individual rights, and they're refusing to do that in many cases. So wouldn't that be an accurate measure of how we could expect them to advocate for us in a convention?
The 10th Amendment, you're absolutely right. That has not been advocated for properly, but a lot of that advocacy for the 10th Amendment has largely gone through the judicial branch and through the courts. And so a convention of states is different because we are not arguing this in a courtroom setting, and we are not leaving interpretation open to the majority of the Supreme Court justices. We are actually going back in and procedurally making some definitive changes to the limited powers that are given to the federal government. So why I'm in particular an advocate for the Convention of States project, and you can learn more about that at conventionofstates.com, is because this is a uniform application that does not deal with ideology with vague terms. all that this application is attempting to do is to impose term limits on the Supreme Court, and then also take the nomination power away from the executive branch. And clearly, the president in the last few election cycles has not been responsible with that power. And so, to have a few of these very structural changes to the federal government's limited power and give that back to the states. And so then that's the first step. And this, it will be comprehensive in the sense that it's a nationwide change because we are going through Article 5 in the Constitution. But that will have a very profound effect on the judiciary, which ultimately is where we can best advocate for the 10th Amendment. So this needs to be a comprehensive process, and a convention of states is the first really big and important step, but it doesn't get us all the way there. And that's what's important to realize. We're not saying that an Article 5 convention can solve all of the problems, but it gets us a really good first solid step.
Yeah. This is fascinating. I mean, I love the idea of it. I just when we just read the news every day, when we see what the electorate is choosing to have as leadership, and the choices, I'm not confident that we have 34 states that could get on board with just the very limited proposals for this convention. You know, the term limits, the assigning of Supreme Court justices, and I want to look at all solutions. I don't want to rule anything out.
This is specifically the solution that our founders, who wrote our U.S. Constitution, who wrote the Declaration, this is the solution they provided, and they specifically gave us Article 5 in order to rein in our federal government. And I think it's important to realize that while certain other state solutions standing up, there were over a dozen states so far that are standing up saying we refuse to recognize Obama's edict on the transgender bathrooms. There are other states that are doing other things. I think that this is a critical time right now where the states are starting to see this. They are starting to say, wait a second, the federal government has slowly creeped up and we are now seeing such an abuse of power. I have a lot of faith in our state legislatures and in the state's individual people to understand that we don't like what's going on in Washington. That is, that's something that we're actually seeing a lot of states that are starting to get on board with this idea that we have to stand up. And so yes. An Article 5 convention is not only this specific legal mechanism that our founders provided for us for this exact type of situation, but it also requires that the states all come together. And rather than popping up here and there like Kentucky last year and then that was quelled, and then, you know, Idaho's trying to do this and that got vetoed by the governor. Oklahoma is trying to pass this thing for abortion that got vetoed. So we're seeing the states are trying. But a convention will bring all of the states together and have two-thirds of the states that are saying, no, we are done. We want to come together for the purpose of proposing practical amendments that will limit the federal government. There is strength in numbers. So this is essentially a way to bring the states together in a way that can't be silenced by one governor, by one Supreme Court decision. And so this is a really good practical solution that the founders provided.
Well, I think it's something that definitely is worth consideration. I mean, like you said, it's built into our system by people way wiser than most of the people we have today. So do you anticipate, I mean, kind of in wargaming this, do you anticipate an attempt by the Supreme Court to come in and strike down using ostensibly the Supremacy Clause to say, yeah, what you guys chose or decided on is unconstitutional. We're striking it. Is there the potential for that?
Right. And so so what's important and what you're referring to of the Supremacy Clause is when there is a conflict between state law and federal law, if the federal law has jurisdiction to be there in the first place, there are things that Congress actually can't legislate on. There are powers that are reserved to the state. So the Supremacy Clause has been incredibly abused. But particular to the Convention of States, it's really important to realize that the states then would actually be acting in the same legislative capacity as Congress. And so in order to propose the amendments, ratify these amendments, the Supreme Court has nothing to do with it. They have absolutely no jurisdiction or discretion for this. And so Article 5 specifically, and you can go and read this online, it's a very, very short article. All that it talks about is that the legislatures of two-thirds of the states call for the convention. They propose amendments. Anything that is passed out of that convention then has to be ratified by three-fourths of the states. So it's all about the states. It's all about the legislative capacity. So the Supremacy Clause has nothing to do with it.
Outstanding.
And these will be practical changes like term limits, things that are just essentially a redistribution of federal powers that will create practical change.
Okay. I thank you so much for addressing that. That is, you give me a lot of stuff that I had not heard before. I appreciate that. And I know I'm just looking at the clock. I can't believe how fast time goes. I say that just about every week. But
yes. You'll just have to have me back on sometime soon and we can talk about
it. I would love it.
And
I definitely want to follow up because there's a lot of things I want to talk about. But just so we don't run out of time, can you please get your website? You've got videos. You've got so many resources. Where can they go to learn more? You already mentioned YouTube.
Yes. And just like you were telling your listeners, if anyone has any further questions, I am such a proponent of the Constitution because I believe in America and I'm an American patriot. And I would love to answer any other questions. People can get a hold of me at jennaellis.org, JennaEllis.org. I have resources available there, and my book is available, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. Signed copies are available through my website, or it's also available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, other bookstores. And I also come and give presentations on our ability to advocate for biblical morality within the Constitution. Go in-depth.
Yeah, you just spoke yesterday.
I'm sorry?
I apologize. You just spoke yesterday, correct? In Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
On Wednesday, yes, at Candlelight. And actually, anyone who's listening, I will be tomorrow morning at the Altar Church talking about originalism, how to understand the text of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights at 8:30 tomorrow at the Altar Church in Coeur d'Alene.
Perfect. Okay, and everyone knows where that is. That's Pastor Remington's church. He was the one that was shot a couple months ago and is recovering.
So please keep him in your prayers as well. And yes, and so I'm always happy to come back and give these presentations. And my desire is to educate American patriots on the fact that we actually have the best legal argument, and we can stand up and we should stand up. We can't afford not to anymore. We cannot afford to be silent.
Amen. Our apathy is going to be our undoing if we don't snap out of it very soon.
Absolutely. So please get a hold of me, JennaEllis.org. And thank you so much for the opportunity to come on and just share all of these ideas and conversation with you. Thanks so much.
This is great. This is really good. There's one topic, and I know we just got a few minutes, which is not really fair to just bring this up with only a few minutes left. But something that jumped out, civil disobedience and the Christian. This is a presentation that you do. Now, for a Christian, they think civil disobedience, you can't do that. That's the government. They're there. God put them there. You have to do whatever they say. But can you just quickly address that? Is there a way to summarize that for the people?
Just summarize. Yes. That's so the idea of civil disobedience is essentially when we are put in the position of obeying God's law or man's law. So in some individual limited circumstances, then that's actually a choice to say God's law is always more supreme than any law that the legislature may put in place. And but that has to be one of those truly defined, understood situations where we have no other option. And interestingly, the founders were presented with that as well. That's why the Declaration was so important to establish that legitimacy for going against their government at the time in Britain and saying, you know, we have tried every single legal alternative. And they set down about 30 different reasons in the Declaration why the British government was usurping their rights and what they had done to try to alter their form of government when their rights that were given by God were being usurped. And they finally said, we are declaring our independence because there is no other way that we can do this.
They had exhausted all recourse.
No recourse. And so in that sense, I believe absolutely that they were justified in doing that and that our declaration was a legitimate appeal to God's authority. So so in a nutshell, that's really the idea of civil disobedience. And it's really important to understand that and when it applies. And for Article 5, right now we have the legal ability to go back in and change our federal government, change their rights. And I think it's really important, not only from a constitutional standpoint, but from a biblical standpoint, to attempt every possible legal way of doing this before we resort to just saying, federal government, I'm just going to go against you. We need to take the legal method that's provided to us in Article 5.
I agree. Amen to that. I'm glad you addressed that. Okay, well, Jenna, thank you so very much. This has been Jenna Ellis, constitutional attorney here at Radio Free Redoubt. God bless you, your ministry, your outreach, and all that you're doing to wake American patriots up. So thank you and God bless.
God bless you too. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye now. That was a treat. Jenna Ellis. .org is her website. She's got a ton of resources up there that pertains to God-fearing patriots living in a time when our heritage is being stripped from us. We perish because of lack of knowledge. Our republic, which is a gift from God, I believe, is going to be soon snatched away from us. We have to know our heritage so we can return to it. If we can't restore it, then we need to rebuild it. But you can't do that if you don't know your heritage. This is John Jacob Schmidt at Radio Free Redoubt. Join us tomorrow night at radiofreeredoubt.com for our weekly podcast. God bless all of you. This is John Jacob Schmidt out.